You're listening to the Dungeons, Dragons, and Psychology Podcast.
Just like at work, a problem player is much like a problem employee, and typically speaking, when there's a problem or a conflict, it comes down to a communication breakdown in some place. Very, very seldomly are you ever going to find a player who just wants to beat a game to destroy it. And it's the same in the workplace. Typically, a problem employee isn't at the workforce to cause problems. They're typically causing problems because either their expectations aren't being met or they're upset about something that usually came from a breakdown in communication earlier on.
Hey you, before we get back to the show, just a quick reminder. If you're enjoying it, give us that 5-star review and share it with at least one other person who you think will also enjoy it. That's it. Back to the show. Hello everyone. I am Stuart.
And I'm Rachel.
And welcome to the Introspective Leader Podcast. Both Rachel and I are excited about today's guest, but for different reasons. Mr. Robert Walker has been involved in role-playing games, such as Dungeons & Dragons, for almost 30 years, and fittingly hosts the Dungeons, Dragons, and Psychology podcast, where he helps role-players understand how they can use psychology to create more memorable campaigns and to facilitate the player experience. Now, this is the part that Rachel is particularly excited about, because she's gotten into role-playing games recently. However, in addition to his expertise in role-playing games, Robert is a director of operations for a burgeoning restaurant corporation and is in the middle of completing a graduate degree in industrial organizational psychology, which are the two aspects that have me the most revved up. And lest I forget, Robert is also the author of the book Session Zero, the DMG to Writing Great Campaigns in Any System. And with that, Robert, welcome to the Introspective Leader Podcast, where, as we like to say, the complexities of leadership are met with an equal complexity of thought.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Robert, we've talked a little bit before we got on screen. We're both really happy to have you here. And as I said in the introduction, for slightly two different reasons, but as I did very clearly make, I would love to hear you and Rachel chat about some of these things, and I can chime in. And I really like where we'll get a little bit more deeply into it when we get into the questions, the connection between psychology and role playing. And even I, someone who is about as ignorant as you can get on role playing, can pretty intuitively get how there's such a strong connection there, and how being versed in psychology and understand psychology would make you a better role player. And I think you and Robert are going to tell me also vice versa, right? Role play can help you become more natural in psychology and real life. And I don't know, maybe. I'm here to learn. This is going to be a fun one for me.
I think it's theoretically safe environments to practice certain interactions.
Cool. Now, before we get into all those fun questions that we got ahead for you, Robert, please take this time to share with our audience anything you would like to share. And if you do not mind, somewhere in there, give a summary explanation of role-playing games for those members of our audience who, like me, are essentially ignorant about them.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Stuart, for having me on today. And role-playing games, for me, are not just a passion. They've been a part of my life for over 25 years, probably close to 30 years now. As far as an explanation of what they are for people who have never been involved with them, really, it's just sort of like adult make-believe is probably the best way to explain it. It's exercising those creative and imagination muscles in our brains and having the opportunity to play different characters that are not yourself. So you can see this through Dungeons and Dragons. If you're familiar with Stranger Things, you see them playing on that show quite a bit. And that's a pretty decent representation of what a D&D game might look like. But you can also see sometimes people playing in armor with foam swords, hitting each other in the park. That's a different type of role-playing. That's live-action role-playing where they're you know, actually exercising in doing physical interactions as their characters and having mock combats, and the SEA is kind of a method of role playing, and it's so many more things even than just that. I mean, it's acting on a stage is role playing. You're embodying a character, and when you're doing it around a table in a game form, it's very much like improvisation. It's you're part of a group that is telling a story together, a collaborative story. And there are some rules that you have. There's some guidelines that you can use to follow. There's a whole bunch of different systems like Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder or Call of Cthulhu. There's dozens of them out there of like expectations of how the game will run. But really, all you really need is your imagination and your willingness to tell a story with a group of people.
All right. Yeah, that makes it a list. Esoteric and daunting for me because, you know, I did have some quasi friends back in high school that did play it and they would go off and do that. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I really didn't do that. But I always got the way they talked about it. And again, this is just me from my teenage perspective, took it so seriously.
Yeah.
Like yeah. I didn't even want to go because I'm not much of a like, rules yeah. guy anyway. I'm like, oh, it's going to be all of this up, like yeah. special things we got to do. And then if I don't yep. get it right, them and their nerdy selves are going to be looking at me and judging me. And you know. Yeah. So I admit I really built up this mm-hmm. whole, I think almost this hierarchical kind of thing with it mm-hmm. in my head. But that was great just to hear you talk about it. It's just like grown-up make-believe. Yeah, yeah mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some rules and guidance and stuff in there. But I really built it up to this. It was like almost like going to the Mormon Tabernacle or something.
Right? Well, I was gonna say, I think to be fair, there are some D&D players that are naked, like seem
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and that yeah. was probably so. It. Yeah, right. It's always those ones that give other people the yeah. impressions yeah. of things. Like, oh, I don't know.
It's true, and I think in a lot of ways, there's like, especially if you look at media portrayals of nerddom and culture and things like that, they have to take it to the extreme because it makes a good character.
You're right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And so I think that sometimes there is sort of like a barrier in psychology. We mm-hmm. we would call it like you might have some implicit biases against mm-hmm. that kind of role play or make-believe because it might seem silly. And it is silly. Let's be honest. We're pretending we're other characters. We're doing silly voices. We're playing rules of magic.
We're not quite at the voice stage yet in my group.
That's cool.
Not all of us. Do. Yet, but,
I like that though. I was like, okay, cool. I'm sorry, Robert. Go ahead.
I mean, not all of us do. I'm one of those who have always gotten very into character, especially when the role playing times come up. So I'll switch, especially if I'm running a game. If I'm a dungeon master and I'm the one who's playing all the other side characters, I want them to sound different. I want them to feel different. I want the experience for my players to be like it is that they're actually experiencing real story. If everyone sounds the same monotone voice, it's hard to differentiate between, you know, character A and character B. But if you give them different quirks of personality and different voices, it makes that a lot easier.
Well, I would think that as close to full immersion you can get into this is going to have a direct correlation of not only how much fun you have, but how much flow comes through it when you're involved in it, right?
Absolutely. So
I was going to get involved. I know I would go with the full intent, like, I am mm-hmm. going to be involved. It's going to come with the different voices. Mm-hmm. I am going to be my character. I know Rachel was telling me, what's the one, the one character that you are?
So I'm the cleric of the group.
Yeah, but what is his trait? What's his trait? You said
she's a giant.
And no, but like she's part? Like...
she's chaotic neutral.
Chaotic neutral. I can really relate to that personality because I think it's sort of my natural personality anyway. So that part I really dig, and I would think if you're going to do something like this, you would want to get as close to creating that world as much as you can. Because I think I would need to do that to get me out of myself and get myself into my character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, we don't do voices, but we do props for sure.
Yeah.
And we do music and we have like a digital map. So I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Robert. I'm sure you have a lot more experience with that than I do, but.
Well, you know, not everybody is comfortable with doing voices. There's sort of like the imposter syndrome that comes over a lot of people that they're worried about if I'm going to be judged, if I'm going to, you know, if I'm going to be this silly, am I going to feel silly? Am mm-hmm. I going to just look ridiculous to all these people? But there's other ways of doing that. And I write about this in my book, that you don't have to do voices to make characters seem different. You can give them all different personality traits that might have key phrases that they say. And even just doing little things like, you know, if you have a shifty character and they mm-hmm. dart their eyes from side to side all the time, you don't have to talk differently to still be acting differently and seem different to the other people. So while it might be like a master skill or something like that, or just a comfort level type thing, there's still ways to enjoy the game and make it different without going to that level if you're not that type of person.
Mm-hmm. So I do want to early on, because I don't want to run out of time to discuss this, because I think this is most pertinent to our audience, mm-hmm. is talk about, and again, let's stress again that Robert also is in a graduate program for industrial mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. organizational psychology. I'm really interested in how role-playing and psychology play off each other, or yeah. how they go together and which one helps the other. But yeah, Robert, yeah. I'll let you take it from there. And Rachel, feel free to interject on anything that you want to on that part.
So I think for me, the most important thing to really understand about role-playing is it is an opportunity to practice life. Yes, you're doing it under the guise of playing a game, but you go into this there's a thing called the willful suspension of disbelief. And this is the same thing that you go through, like when you watch a movie and you get invested in the characters. It's like why an emotional movie will make you cry. They're just characters. It's just a story. None of this is real. And yet when you allow yourself to disbelieve the fact that this isn't real, which means you're accepting for a brief moment in time that this experience that you're having or these other characters are having is a real experience, then you become emotionally invested and emotionally involved in it. Well, when you're in a role-playing game, that same sense of disbelief can be used in your everyday life. So you might sit around a table just telling jokes and being silly with your friends once a week, but what you're doing for 4 hours is you're practicing dealing with difficult emotions, you're practicing communication between groups, you're practicing team building skills and goal accomplishment as a group of people. These are the same skills that you take into the workplace. Those skills are valuable in almost every setting in your life. And so I think that's really the psychology is like the bridge. It's just the understanding that these times of make-believe can affect you and benefit you in your real life. And so that kind of is what I've used my show to do, is say psychology can help role-playing games, but also role-playing games can help you with your day-to-day psychology. They can help you better understand yourself as a person. They can help you better understand the people that you're working with. They can help you be a better communicator in the workplace, for me, it definitely helps me be a better manager at work. Like scheduling people for a D&D game is just as difficult as it is to write a schedule for the workplace. So you get to practice all those skills mm-hmm. under the guise of playing a game.
Yeah, it's something that was occurring to me while you were talking, because I think something that I've struggled with a lot that we've talked about on this podcast before is when I manage people is having difficult conversations. Mm-hmm. And I think that's relevant for employees as well, as having a different conversation with their boss. But I was just thinking when you were talking, that can absolutely happen in a D&D session, is like yeah. your character.
Oh, I imagine.
Your character has like either a difficult thing they're going to do or have a difficult, I mean, I don't know, depending on the level of engagement you're doing, but like have a difficult conversation with yeah. another character. And yes, it's quote, it's fake. It's not real, but it's a way to, if you're invested and you're having those emotions, it may not be the same long-term outcome as having
I know
that
I'd probably be
boss,
feeling
but,
it just like it's real.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. 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 There are definitely moments where you're like, this is, it feels like you are emotionally invested, and having that practice of, well, let me deal with this emotional issue mm-hmm. with this other character or this other player. That's what I was thinking of. Is like, that's great practice for then translating that to a workplace difficult conversation,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, oh, you get to practice and you're not going to get fired. I mean, the worst that yeah. happened is they may not ask you to come back to D&D anymore.
That's right.
But, you know, I definitely can see how that can, if you approach it like mm-hmm. that, how that definitely can have an advantage on the workplace. And that's what excited me most, having Robert in, because mm-hmm. it's not something I've experienced. But again, if I did do it, I would use it sort of as a mm-hmm. training ground mm-hmm. just to sharpen myself up a little bit mm-hmm. more. Because, you know, I think I do pretty well at that when I'm on my A game. But that's something you can almost never get enough practice at, mm-hmm. right? And I'm sure there would be things revealed to you about yourself that you wouldn't get revealed about yourself or others in any other kind of context. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because just as he said, as you both have been saying, just the pure suspension of belief, mm-hmm. and especially if you're sort of existing in that different realm, and you are being another character mm-hmm. and trying to learn how to think, that to me is the big one.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I don't know, Robert, you can tell me if that's what attracts a lot of people or not. To me, I think the biggest attraction for me, if I were going to start doing this, would be just really being committed to be a whole different character mm-hmm. than I am myself mm-hmm. and really try to think like mm-hmm. that character. And of course, that's going to sharpen your empathic skills mm-hmm. because you're having to come out of your, as much as possible, come out of that prison we all live in, which is the brain, right? Mm-hmm. We all absolutely. Live in one brain, and it's solitary confinement. And any chance you get to try to at least imagine your way out of side mm-hmm. of that, that's definitely going to make you, a sharper human being, I would mm-hmm. think, right? That's not the perfect word I'm looking for.
I almost think more flexible, right?
Yeah.
Broadens your ability to react, because you can almost, I've not done this at this point, but it broadens your ability to think, just to think in different ways. You're thinking in a different way is what you're doing. I'm not by nature a chaotically neutral person, probably right. consider myself, probably lawful good, even though I don't know. But anyway, I'm definitely probably good. And so when I'm trying to think neutrally, like the first few sessions, like I was just doing all the good things.
Right.
And as I progressed and we got a little bit more strict, because our DM at the beginning was like, this first time most of us have played. So he was like, we're going to be real lax with the rules. We're going to take our time. We're going to ease everybody into this. And so as the rules tightened up and as I got more practice, I was like, I need to start thinking about, because otherwise we're just, there was like two characters running the game and everybody else was just kind of tagging along. And so at a certain point I was like, well, I don't want to just heal everybody all the, I'm not just going to cast healing spells for everything, because that's kind of boring, right?
Right.
So I started to get a little bit more.
And that's not what a chaotic neutral would do.
Exactly.
How does this benefit me? What are my set core principles?
So it took me time, but I do really like that piece of thinking like, What if I didn't care about what was good or evil?
Right.
And I just
outside of my own ideas
and of what that means.
One of the really beautiful things about that, like a scenario like that, is you live your life day to day in a lawful good perspective, uh-huh. right? Uh-huh. And then you get to have an opportunity to try a different world where you're not like that, and you get to see what are the consequences mm-hmm. when I'm not obeying the laws, and when it's all low stakes. Evaluation of what would my life be like, or what would the consequences be like if I acted differently from the way that I am?
Oh yeah. I right off is when Rachel started talking to me about it, she would come, cause she does these on the day before we meet to do our, so she's sort of first thing we do is sort of talk how that went. And I right there, I saw that attraction to it, because mm-hmm. I am so interested in understanding humans and human nature and trying to understand how different people think differently mm-hmm. and what would motivate them, mm-hmm. why they would be. I mean, come on. The more we talk about this, of course, this can make you a better manager, leader, employer, just a human being mm-hmm. in society, because we're social animals. Of course it can. If you take that approach towards it. And I don't think that's using the game, because it sounds like you need to take that approach to get the most out of the game, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not do the voices, not do all that stuff.
I think that makes sense.
Because it is role playing.
Yeah.
You're not really role playing if you're not immersing yourself into that different character that is
because you could outside you could of just you. You could just try to, you could just try to like, well, we're just going to beat the challenges that the DM has created for us super quickly, right? But then that's not like necessarily
any game fulfills that,
right? Exactly.
You don't need to do role playing, right? Sorry, I'm sounding like the big champion for role playing now.
No, but it really is Robert, the difference. you're right. You're exactly right. Like a board game or like a card game, all of them are fun. They all have a social aspect. If you're playing with other people, those are all great. But the real beauty of role-playing is you have the opportunity to experience emotions as though you were a different person, mm-hmm. to experience, you know, difficult situations that are not happening in your day-to-day mm-hmm. life. I did a whole episode on the psychology of character death and how when a character dies in the story, you are experiencing like a micro version mm-hmm. of what it is like to have somebody who you care about die in real life. And then when that really happens in real life, it's certainly going to be far more traumatic, but you've at least had some mental practice in processing those emotions. Mm-hmm.
And I won't say too much about the details, but Rachel just went through this. She didn't have her character die, but she was sort of indirectly, not responsible, but she was indirectly helped lead to that character's death, right?
Yeah, I believe it.
I'm having an interesting time playing the cleric and a chaotic neutral yeah. character, because again, everyone expects me to just heal them all the time, and yeah. I'm like, well, sometimes I'm like, I think you guys kind of got yourself into this mess.
Yep.
And
get yourself out of it.
It's not my job to do that. You know, I'll do it when I think it's worth it. But we all decide, you know, because that's what essentially the group of us had decided, we're not going to engage with this thing. And then one character, she's our like kind of drunk. I think she's like a nymph or something. I can't remember exactly. I think she's like an elf, half elf or something. Mm-hmm. She was going to go off and she just nudged. While we're all saying we're going to leave this alone, she goes over and pushes the top open. And yeah. of course, it ends up with her on the verge of death. And I was like,
and you only had one healing spell.
Yeah,
left,
I only had
right?
one. I only had one opportunity to heal. Yeah, and there were many other people who could have healed her. Yeah. She got hit twice. She had the opportunity to heal herself. I was like, I think that, you know, now not everybody else felt the same way after.
Well, there's two things that interested me on this. This is the reason I brought it up when Robert talked about the dying of the character and how that can have mm-hmm. such a visceral effect on you, right?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, yeah, how the dynamics of the team just clicked, like changed like that, like a snap, yeah. Rachel uh-huh. was talking about. And what I thought was also funny, someone else also would not heal her, but this person's character was clearly an evil character, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And everybody's like, well, of course, she's not going to do it. She's chaotic. Yeah.
So I took the blame because I'm the healer, and I'm like, excuse me, guys, I don't think this is fair.
But Rachel also said she had just really started immersing herself into the role and hadn't really told everybody else that she was trying to really take on the character mm-hmm. of this character, and she thinks also that could lead to. But I thought all that was just like at work managing 40 people 100%. In a health clinic, right? I so got engaged when she mm-hmm. was telling me about that. But do you have anything to add on that part, Robert?
Just go ahead, briefly Rachel, to close that. Like when we were talking about the emotional intensity that can happen, like our GM at a certain point was like, because again, this is the first time this is really most of us are playing. Our GM at a certain point was like, we're going to take a pause because I'm afraid this is starting to interfere with y'all's actual friendship dynamic. So we're going to take a pause and regroup next time and sort of go from there. He was very much like, I'm not sure what to do with this. Obviously, this is not what I thought was going to happen. I was curious if you have any thoughts about that, like the balance between, because I do think some people, and I'm not even excluding myself from this, some people might struggle with separating, because we spent the first part kind of talking about immersing yourself in the game. But there is an important piece to remember that mm-hmm. it is a game, and I think some people might struggle with that. I don't know if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, so I mean, that has kind of been one of the criticisms of D&D kind of since the late 70s when it really started coming into mainstream attention is the concept of is it just an escapism? And I think you're right. For some people, certain people can use it as an escapism mm-hmm. where they invest so much time, so much energy into their mm-hmm. characters that they sort of just become overly invested in them. And I think that's the other side of that coin with the willful suspension of disbelief. Mm-hmm. You have to also remember that at the end of the game or at the end of whatever session or scenario you're playing, you do need to resume your disbelief. Mm-hmm. Like you need to go back to that point where you realize, okay, that was just a story. These are my friends around the mm-hmm. table. I'm not really mad at that person. I'm mad at what their character was doing and be able to separate those two. it is something that I think occasionally happens, but I'm in 25 years of playing, I've never had an experience that has been, that I would consider it was unhealthy for more than a moment or two, mm-hmm. Before people are reminded, Hey, it's just a game. We're all friends here. Mm-hmm. And, that usually brings people back to the center. But what you tend to find in moments like that, where you are overly immersed is because they're having a real emotional mm-hmm. experience. They're having a real connection to the story that's taking place. And so, yeah, you can get wrapped up in that. Like just if you watch a movie and you get really involved in the characters and you start to cry, I've had people cry at my role-playing mm-hmm. games as well. I remember one very clearly that, you know, myself was running the game and there was a tragic character death that was more of like a sacrificing your own mm-hmm. life so that the rest of the group would survive. And I look up at the table and there's three men between the ages of 30 and 45, and they all have tears in their eyes mm-hmm. crying over this shared emotional experience. And now, you know, 15 years after that, we all look back at it as like one of our fondest group memories mm-hmm. that we had this sort of shared delusion of this sad moment that we all had bonded over.
Yeah. I just would be repeating myself, but I just find that so appealing that part of it, again, just even the practice of getting very deep in and then pulling yourself back out. That's a skill in itself. That goes that flexibility and adaptability you were so talking
important.
About. Right?
And obviously work is real life, but it is so important mm-hmm. at the end of the day to be able to go home and unplug a little bit. It's like so important to be able to, you know, not completely, because that is real life, not completely dissociate from it, but say, all right, I'm letting this go and I will reengage tomorrow morning. And I think D&D can teach you some of that skills of, all right, I've been emotional about this. What do I need to do to manage this emotion and re-enter the world? Right. I think the same thing can happen when you're...
And I think it's very similar to the idea of, you know, leaving your emotions at the door when you go into work, or the fact that, you know, there's things like put on your customer service voice. You know, it's all playing a role.
Yeah, they're all avatars. They're exactly. all avatars, man.
Absolutely.
There's just different versions of yourself, you know?
And so the more practice you have at doing that in different scenarios for different reasons, just the better you are at it.
Yeah. Hey, I since we're on this vein, I know I heard you mention about one of the readings I did on you. You were talking about problem players and mm-hmm. how DMs can manage problem players. So I would like to hear you talk about that a little bit, because again, just dealing with problem players, mm-hmm. problem employees, problem people,
you can
always be taken from everywhere techniques to do that. And I just find it interesting too, of how often that happens, what kind of problem, when we say a problem player, what are we talking about, and what would be the DM's role? Because mm-hmm. it sounds like the DM's not supposed to be this real super authoritative figure. They're just supposed to be there to help the game go along. So, well,
kinda like they're managing the game.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, really that is the role of the DM at the table, is the role of the manager. They are the ones who have decided what the story is that everybody's going to follow. They decide what checks are required, what sort of elements and tools are going to be used to move the story along. So they really are kind of playing the role of the team manager in that perspective. And just like at work, a problem player is much like a problem employee. And typically speaking, when there's a problem or a conflict, it comes down to a communication breakdown in some place. Mm-hmm. Either what they were expecting to get out of the game was not clearly stated mm-hmm. at the beginning, so that they played in a different way, more towards what they were hoping for, and that communication never took place. So it would be similar to being at work, where job duties or expectations of an employee were not clearly stated, so that they were not following through with those, or they were just doing their own thing. And those sorts of problems are the biggest ones that you're going to run across. Very, very seldomly are you ever going to find a player who just wants to beat a game to destroy it. Mm-hmm. Typically, they go spend 4 to 6 hours of their time doing this hobby because it's something that they enjoy and they're looking to get something out of it, other than, you know, they're not there to piss everybody
you
off.
Can't,
you know,
if you destroy the game too quickly, then it's over. Right? You can't engage with it that way.
And it's the same in the workplace. Typically, a problem employee isn't at the workforce to cause problems. They're typically causing problems because either their expectations aren't being met or they're upset about something that usually came from a breakdown in communication earlier on. And so the best way to manage those is the way it should have been handled in the first place, which was open and honest communication, finding out what the expectations they wanted in the game were, should have been from the get-go, and finding if there's a way to incorporate what it was that they were looking for in the first place back into the game so that they don't feel like they have to act out seeking whatever it was they were trying to get out of it and going about it in a way that breaks the story that was trying to be told.
I think you really hit something key on, and I don't think I've said it a lot or even consciously thought about it as a manager. And as I told you before we hit record on this, Robert, I've been managing now for almost 30 years. One of the big things I think I do, and I think I do well, and again, I don't think I've ever talked a lot about it because some of those things, again, there's a lot of things I don't get intuitively and I don't do well. But in managing, one of the things that did get really intuitively, it was a lot about managing expectations, mm-hmm. having shared expectations, what the organization's expectations mm-hmm. are, my expectations are, you understanding those expectations, me understanding your expectations, seeing where the gap is there, if there's mm-hmm. a gap, mm-hmm. and then constantly following up and making sure those expectations are like two trains riding parallel to each other, right. that they're moving along mm-hmm. the same line, going in the same direction, yep. and that there's not going to be a separation there. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever really verbalized it like mm-hmm. that, but as soon as you were talking about that, because, yeah, that is a big Huge. Part of what I just do unconsciously.
Yeah.
Always when I get with my employees, when I'm communicating with them, a lot of what I was doing unconsciously was what's going on with them, are what is what I'm expecting still aligning with what they're expecting, mm-hmm. or we're on the same track. It seems like we are good to go. Okay. Yeah.
And Dungeons and Dragons has, especially in recent years, come up with a tool that they call Session Zero, which is mm-hmm. also the title of my book. But Session Zero in D&D is a session where you're typically not playing your characters, but what you're doing is you're sitting around the table as a group and you are explaining the DM's expectations, you're identifying the player expectations, you're talking about what they are or are not comfortable about having as elements in their game. Like, are they okay with having, you know, murder in the game? Are they okay with having scenes with sexual encounters in the game? So you're really setting the tone by having a conversation about what all those expectations are. And I think in the workplace that works the same way as like a employee orientation or even the interview process. It's very, very similar in both regards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or just that first set down between manager and employee, mm-hmm. and yep. then manager, employee, and team. You know, you're constantly having those session zeros, right?
Yep.
So they didn't used to do like, now I can believe I'm a child of the 80s, so I'm sure they didn't have session zeros to do like talk about, oh, does violence bother you? Does murder right. bother you? Yeah. Like, of course it doesn't, sissy. You know,
yeah.
they wouldn't use sissy. They would use another word.
There was but, no
yeah, exactly. My mom let me go watch. I've told you this. Right. My mom let me go watch Jaws when yeah. I was like 9 years old. Like there was just no line there anymore. But anyway, back to something people care about. So was there not a session zero? Is it relatively new?
It's one of those things that really has kind of been brought to the forefront of the community really within the last, like, I'd say 5 to 10 years. Conversation around this topic has become pretty popular. And I think a lot of groups did it early on. They just didn't have a name for it and they didn't make it official. So there, you know, you'd have a moment where you sat with your friends, you're like, hey, what do you want this game to be about this time? And that was pretty much it. Let's play Dragon Riders, and we're gonna fly on dragons and hunt down monsters. And that was what Session yeah. Zero used to be. Nowadays, it's much more formal. It has a lot more tools that can be used to like identify where somebody might be triggered or somebody might not mm-hmm. be comfortable dealing with a certain thing, and how to deal with a situation that might come up later if that does happen. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of evolved as, you know, like the workplace has evolved. Like there's so many things in the workplace that have also changed during that same time. And I think because they are so, so similar in a lot of terms of management and working together as a team, they've kind of had to evolve in a similar fashion.
Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like I feel like any team, because I've joined some teams or been on the beginning of like starting up a team, and maybe it wouldn't be this formalized, but I feel like all teams, like in workplaces, should do some version of this where they, because I've definitely been, I've been thrown into teams where it's like, you know, nobody really knows each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I think people should know, you know, the military environment, you know, some things about people because you've got rank assigned, right? So right. I kind of usually know where I fall within that system. But there's still not there, you know, sometimes some people of higher rank don't really care that much about it. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they do. And not knowing that makes power dynamics very complicated in teams, yeah. especially if it's brand new. So I feel like having, and obviously you can't make a formalized method like this, but I think for every team that ever gets created in the workplace, but I think it would be helpful for more teams to have some kind of like session zero of like, mm-hmm. if we don't know each other, here's who we are. Here's what our goals are. Here's what we bring to the table for this yeah. thing. I don't know. I think that'd be really helpful.
You go ahead, Robert, and I have something to add on there, but I don't want to interrupt.
I think one of the beautiful things is so many of those tools already exist in the workplace. Mm-hmm. I think they're just underutilized.
Yeah.
Right. Most companies, especially professional companies, have employee handbooks. So they have mm-hmm. an outline of what the expectations for the employee are. They have sexual harassment trainings. They have all these tools that show an employee what is expected of them. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I think they're just sort of like brushed under the rug, and, you know, employee training is not given the same amount of attention as it should be given. And I think sometimes your problematic employees, just like problematic players, are just a breakdown of that communication didn't happen the way it should have early on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think to your point, like, talking about ad hoc teams, like mm-hmm. if you're putting a team together, as you know,
a working group,
yeah. however you want to call it. You know, I used to be really heavily involved in process improvement mm-hmm. with Lean Six Sigma. And that was a key part of what we did. And every time, and this wasn't required, not everyone always did it, but I early on, when I would get with these teams, and that was a big part of my job mm-hmm. when I was over where I used to be, when I'd get sent, okay, we're going to do this. This is what we want to happen. We need to do some kind mm-hmm. of PI initiative on this. All right. You know, we'd get a team together. Once I got that team together, we would get together, and that's what that was. Now I will start calling it a session zero. I like that. I just call this is like, we're just here to have a cup of tea
yeah.
and get to know each other. And we will not talk nothing
yeah.
about what we're going to be doing in the future, other than the very peripheral, mm-hmm. really mm-hmm. mainly just, what is our objective?
Yeah.
What's the overarching outcome that we're looking to achieve? But that would really be just each person talking about themselves, mm-hmm. what they're bringing to it. What's their expectations for this? What are they understanding mm-hmm. about this process mm-hmm. improvement? Sometimes why they were even picked. Mm-hmm. Some people are like, I don't even know why I'm here. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how to do with this. I always knew because I was mm-hmm. the black belt for the mm-hmm. project. And I was like, well, you were picked. And you would mm-hmm. just, you could start then saying, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people understand where their roles would come in, where their roles would sort of phase out, because people would yeah. play different
yeah.
roles at different times. But anyway, not to go too long with that, but that was very much a session yeah. zero. Yeah. And yeah, you did talk shop a little bit just to get an idea. People get an idea of what we were doing and people's general roles that they were going to be playing. But it was more of just getting comfortable with each other and me yeah. gauging who's the chatty Cathy, mm-hmm. who's yeah. the one I have to pull out a little bit more.
Right.
Who's going to be the negative Nelly? Mm-hmm. Who's yeah. going to be the positive Paul? That, you know, oh, that's a great idea. Let's go with it, right?
Yep.
All of those kind of things. And then the next meeting, now we can get to business mm-hmm. having a better idea of who we are, what we are, and what our roles are. Anyway, yeah. long Absolutely. Way of saying everything y'all said, but that definitely should happen mm-hmm. in any type mm-hmm. of ad hoc team. But yeah.
I agree.
Cool. I don't really have any, we're getting close to our time. I don't have any more formal questions. Rachel, did you have anything you wanted to ask Robert before we turn it over to him to tell a little bit about himself and where then tell the listeners where they can go to find him and find his book and his podcast. Cause I think Robert has a lot to offer, not just for the D&D people, but I'm going to save your podcast and I am going to download it and I'm going to start listening to it because I'm really finding this probably the closest I'll get ever to playing. I've got enough going on. So give me a little break.
Lots of people never play D&D, but I can listen vicariously.
That would be good.
Yeah, that's true.
I can live vicariously. I'm fine with that.
No, I really don't have anything else. I think this has been a great conversation. So.
Well, Robert, it's all yours and we'll put a bow on this episode.
Awesome. Well, yeah, if you want to find me, you can check out the podcast. It's on every platform. It's called the Dungeons, Dragons, and Psychology Podcast. You can also find me on Instagram. I'm at Dungeons_Dragons_Psychology. You could also check out my website, www.DungeonsDragonsPsychology. That's all one word, .com. And you can message me through there. And my book is available on Amazon. It's Session Zero, the DMG to Writing Great Campaigns in Any System. And I'm always open if you want to send me a message on any of those platforms or chat with me. I love talking to people. I'm a very social creature. And if you have ideas for episodes or if you'd like to have me on yours, just reach out. I love doing this kind of stuff.
And we really enjoy this. I really enjoy this. I knew I was going to enjoy this, so I just did. I said, you're going to like this. You're going to like this. And it let me be a little bit of a kid a little bit, talking about things a little bit. That was a lot of fun. And Robert and our listeners, all the links and everything that to get to Robert, his social media links, the links to his book, that will be in the description section of this episode. Mm-hmm. Robert, thank you for joining us. We really enjoyed having you. This was a fun talk.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having me.
And everybody else, we will see you next time.
Bye, everybody.